Directions Magazine. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. This weekly podcast brings you the latest information on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Cybersecurity. We've heard it mentioned often in the news where there is the possibility of state-sponsored elements from China or Russia disrupting and attacking communications or other elements of our infrastructure. On a personal level, we hear advertisements for identity theft protection. Cyber attacks pose extremely detrimental problems to our national security. Today, we discuss the cyber location nexus. But first, a word from our sponsor. Directions Magazine and the International Map Industry Association invites you to the first .map conference this September 8th to the 10th in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Map makers from the print and digital worlds will gather to explore new ways to deliver content, new ways to derive revenue from both print and digital, and new ways to design maps for a new audience in web, mobile, and print. We hope you'll join us for this unique collision of ideas in map publishing. Find more details at mapconference.net. Today we're going to talk about a topic that was brought into focus by an article that appeared in Trajectory Magazine, a publication of the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Foundation. The title of the article was The Cyber Location Nexus, written by Kristen Quinn. According to the article, the term cyber location nexus was coined by our good friend Dr. Chris Tucker of Yale House Ventures, and many of you will know him from his current project, Map Story. So let me begin by quoting one of the opening paragraphs of that article, and I quote, "On Tuesday, March 12, 2013, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released its worldwide threat assessment of the U.S. intelligence community, naming cyber the top priority. The same day on Capitol Hill, General Keith Alexander, commander of the U.S. Cyber Command and director of the National Security Agency, told the Senate Armed Services Committee that cyber threats are becoming more severe. Quote, "We are in a major transformation because our critical infrastructures, economy, personal lives, and even basic understanding of and intersection with the world are becoming more intertwined with digital technologies and the Internet," quote, according to the ODNI assessment. The most cogent statement in this article is cyber adversaries work from real locations on Earth using tangible hardware. Real servers are located in buildings that connect to fiber running through dirt and cement. All virtual activities originate from and are made possible by people and objects somewhere on Earth at some point in time. At this intersection is the cyber location nexus. Adina, professionals I deal with in the cyber area don't really understand geospatial, and I sense that geospatial people don't necessarily get cyber, and maybe more to the point, the intersection of the physical and logical geography. The dependencies are not well understood, and actually in that same article, Sean Gorman, formerly with Esri and GeoIQ, put it, I think, very well when he said, you can have very logically well-structured networks with a lot of alternative paths and good security practices against it, but the physical infrastructure could still be vulnerable, and all those logical paths could go across the same bridge in Manhattan, Gorman said. So from a logical perspective, the computing may look redundant, said Gorman, but if that one physical line fails, then all the logical redundancies fail as well. This is something that has been seen a lot recently through natural disasters, accidents, and malicious intent, Gorman said. You have this logical domain, you have this physical domain, and what we know more about in geospatial. And so, Adina, is this an area that more geospatial professionals need to better understand, or is this better left to the people in the intelligence community to sort out for us?
It seems clear to me that this is yet another one of those areas of interest or disciplines where we really are bringing together a whole suite of disciplines. So in the same way that we talk about geodesign as a place where the designers and the construction people and the geospatial people and the landscape people and the energy people sort of all come together in a charrette to try to figure out the best way forward, the same thing is sort of happening here with different kinds of problems. As I read through this article, and I'll be honest, I read through it twice, and it's kind of rough going for somebody who doesn't think about these things too often, and I'm in that camp. What I came to realize was that the best way for me to think about this, trying to put on my geographer hat, was to think about the idea of there being different spaces. And this is a very geographic kind of idea, and when I was in college, the big conversation was about, well, okay, so we've got this physical world that we can map and we pretty much understand. And then what's really interesting are all these other spaces that have all these relationships that seem to have very little to do with what's going on the face of the earth. And the example that was sort of drilled into my head was airplane space, right? So mm-hmm. New York is much closer to Boston in airplane space than it is in geographic space, right? Which is very important when you study things like epidemics, right? Because if the airplane flies from LA to Houston and somebody on the airplane is sick, then those two places are very close together in airplane space or disease space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a sense, what this whole argument is about, I think, is that we've got this physical map of the world and we've got this cyber security map of the world, and where they intersect is very, very important. I think the hard part for those outside of geospatial to grasp is that, in a sense, this is just another map, but it doesn't look at all like the map of the Earth. But when we do, in fact, nail down points that match on both maps, that's when we're identifying where the squeeze points are, where those bridges are, as John Gorman put it.
Yeah, and that is really where the physical and the logical come together. There's another way to look at it, and I found it instructive to watch one of the videos that was presented at the GeoIn conference in 2010, and I've put that link in the show notes as well. So in this presentation, this individual, Major General Vutrano, was her name, she said, "We grew up treating cloud and IT as an administrative function. It's now an operational dependency." And she also mentioned that if you are a transportation command and you want to support Haiti in a crisis, your connective tissue, and I thought that was a good way to phrase it, your connective tissue includes Walmart and FedEx and the railway systems. And all of that connective tissue is part of the cyber environment, and their vulnerabilities have just become your operational vulnerabilities. Most people don't think like this, right? IT is better left to the CIO, not the GIO. It's a question of whether you think we better understand the cyber location nexus that should change our mindset of information management. I think it changes our entire picture of how we go about managing data and our infrastructure environment.
And I think it has to. There's no way we're going to be able to keep ourselves safe as a country and potentially take action against our enemies if we don't understand how all of these things are put together. And again, having that picture in your head of these different spaces or these different layers of information in your GIS is absolutely crucial. And you've got to have the experts in each of those layers in the same room, or virtually in the same room, to have those conversations about how do we get the mission done. I really like the comment in the article about how it used to be about making sure that the infrastructure was set. No, no, no. The goal is to make sure that the mission is set and has everything it needs to go forward and be done.
That's absolutely critical, because if you've ever been in what I would call a simulated cyber attack, and all anybody has to realize is if their power goes out, in many ways that's a simulated cyber attack. And if you were involved in Hurricane Sandy, you were involved in a simulated cyber attack. For us down here in Alabama, when we had a couple of EF5 tornadoes go through, that was a simulated cyber attack. You know what happens, right? The power goes out, the communication infrastructure goes down. People cannot communicate, and as you just mentioned, the mission cannot go forward. That mission is, how do you restore power? How do you get food to people? How do you restore the public safety infrastructure so that there isn't mass looting and you devolve into a chaos. All of these things must be prepared for, and I think we're talking about these things. We may not be preparing for those things, and I'm, you know, we're happy that these conversations are happening. But if another Hurricane Sandy came around and hit Boston, are we prepared?
Right, and the good news, and this is a strange way to put the good news, is that we're getting to practice this as citizens in situations like the one you just described. Mm-hmm. Here in Boston in February, we had this huge blizzard, and power did go out. I was fortunate that my power did not go out. But the big challenge that we had was the governor shut down the roads. Mm-hmm. So unless you were an emergency vehicle or police or whatever, some special kind of infrastructure, you had to stay home. So if you worked at a hospital, as my neighbor does, the big challenge was she had to get to work. Right, so you either had to get special permission or you had to have an escort or have the police come and take you.
Exactly. Right.
So, again, it really helped us think about these other kinds of infrastructure which are required for us to – and this is just simply function. You know, people aren't, thankfully, sending bombs over here or cutting off our water. We just can't use the roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, again, the ability for – people exploring this to bring it home to citizens and then to their peers within the agencies and all the layers of the Defense Department and the government is really, really important.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, it's great that we're beginning to talk about the problem. I want to go to an article that was the original article that Chris Tucker wrote, and it appeared in CSO Magazine in 2009. And it brings it down to a somewhat more personal level. I think the examples we just gave are fairly personal, but Tucker said that the world is experiencing a collision of real-world geography with nearly unlimited connectivity. We have an explosion in devices that are IP-enabled. We now have enough address space to enable TVs and refrigerators and make every house smart. We are phasing our entire world to the web. We're entering this world where you're going to connect everything, and it's all location-enabled. And, of course, he's more or less talking about the Internet of Things. So if you're one of those people, and we discussed this actually in last week's podcast, which is who's carrying around your cell phone all the time, you are fairly location-enabled and connected to a cyber infrastructure, as we kind of all know. But there was one example that I thought was even more interesting, and was in one of the articles I have in the show notes, which is if you're going to the grocery store, and you forgot your list of what to buy, and somebody wanted to transmit that list to you, but for some reason there was this disruption in service, they would know the cell tower to hit that would prevent you from getting your grocery list. Now, it's a rather extreme example, but it's an example of all that one-to-one connectivity that's going to be disrupted in one of these very pointed cyber attacks. Now, we may think that's a strange example, but targeting individuals very well could happen, but it starts with knowing where you're going or where you're coming from.
Well, and again, it brings it home to us, again, as citizens, or if you're in the DOD, you can understand that the example very well. And what it talks about is we know where you're going. We know roughly the route you're taking because we know where you started and we know what the destination is. We know what cell towers are in that area. We know what kind of cell phone you have and what network you're on. I mean, there's a whole bunch of information that we know that is location specific. And then we can use that to our advantage by, as you said, turning off, if you like, this one cell tower so you can't get the message.
Right, right.
I think the more examples we can give of how these kinds of things work in our sort of day-to-day lives, I mean, if we really did, in fact, want to prevent somebody from getting their shopping list, which most of us would be totally fine with, that really drives home the layers that need to be stacked up to do this, and more importantly, how easy it would be for our enemies to do the same thing.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Leave a comment where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine, or send us a tweet at Directions Magazine. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.